session, please see the place. Case number 10-7101, Roger Rudder et al. Appellants versus Shannon Williams, officer et al. Mr. Latimer for appellants, Ms. Wilson for appellees.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Gregory Latimer on behalf of the appellants. This is a case involving a family that had the misfortune of attending the Caribbean Festival and having a run-in with the police. As a result of that incident, lawsuit was filed in this matter in November of 2009, and in January of 2010, a motion to dismiss was filed. The complaint set forth a number of claims. It involved several adults and two minors, 5 and 15 years of age. In their motion to dismiss, the district and Officer Chatman indicated that they were seeking partial dismissal of the complaint and that they were not seeking dismissal of the claims of the common law claims of the minor plaintiffs, nor were they seeking dismissal of the Fourth Amendment claims with respect to Officer Chatman. In a ruling by the trial court, notwithstanding those exceptions, the trial court dismissed the entire complaint. And in doing so, basically indicated that counsel for the plaintiff had conceded to the dismissal of the minor's complaints based upon a statute of limitations, the one-year statute of limitations on the common law claims, and then inexplicably dismissed the Fourth Amendment claims, notwithstanding the fact that the district and Chapman never sought dismissal of that and indicated to the trial court that no basis for that dismissal existed. Counsel at that time filed a motion for reconsideration explaining to the court, or attempting to explain to the court, that it was a misstatement in terms of the claims that were to be dismissed, and pointing out to the court that much evidence existed that would show constitutional violations on behalf of Chatman. In a minute order, the district court denied that motion. On appeal, the appellees take the position, incredulously, that notwithstanding the fact that they never asked for the dismissals of the minor plaintiff's claims, and notwithstanding the fact that they never sought dismissal of the Fourth Amendment claim, this court should dismiss it anyway and should uphold the ruling. And that is somewhat startling, given the fact that the common law claims are brought under District of Columbia law, and the Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia has repeatedly stated that you cannot hold children, minors, accountable when their representatives make mistakes or do things that are not in their interest. You just can't do that. And that has been pointed out, and for reasons that simply cannot be explained, the appellees take a different position. With respect to the Fourth Amendment claims, the appellees completely ignore the facts in the complaint, indicates that there's no evidence at all that the plaintiffs did not submit any evidence at all or any allegations that Chatman had been involved in any excessive force, when paragraph 24 of the complaint specifically says that he beat these people with a baton. It is absolutely incredible that the arguments that are being made in this particular case, given the fact that we're talking about a 12B6 motion, and we're talking about the fact that everything had to be looked at in the light most favorable to the non-moving party at that time, and given the fact that the district itself agreed that they did not even seek an entire dismissal of this case. So the case law is undisputed about claims of minors. The case law is undisputed about what you have to do in a 12B6 motion. And if the trial court was going to sui sponte, dismiss this case, it had to at least give the plaintiff the opportunity to amend the complaint. Below, the plaintiff submitted 2 amended complaints, and the trial court did not allow them to amend the complaint.
Now, what about on the common law claims? Because I see a potential distinction here in how it transpired between the common law claims and the Fourth Amendment claims. On the common law claims, it seemed that the error that you're now alleging by the district court was invited in some respects by counsel, in the sense that the proposed order acknowledged dismissal of all the common law claims without distinguishing the minors' claims.
That's true, and that's unfortunate. There's no question counsel made a mistake. Counsel misspoke, but counsel brought that to the attention to the trial court in a motion for reconsideration. But even so, the point of the matter is this. The District of Columbia has dealt with this issue. These are district claims, and so I believe District of Columbia law would have to apply with respect to those common law claims. The District of Columbia Court of Appeals has dealt with situations such as that on many cases. Hott versus Dancy Bay involved a case where trial counsel engaged in misconduct, and the court dismissed the case. And the Court of Appeals say you just cannot hold the minor plaintiff accountable for the sins of the lawyer.
Not to get too deep into the eerie weeds, but I'm not sure that D.C. law, local D.C. law, controls in federal court on that procedural question of the invited error as to the minors' claims.
Well, I think that when you're talking about the invited error of the claims, when you're talking about the procedural law of the court would, yes, apply. But I believe that if you're talking about claims, because when you're looking at the claim, you're talking about the statute of limitations. And so you have to look at the District of Columbia law to determine the statute of limitations. Under the statute of limitations in the District of Columbia, the minor child statute does not begin to run until that child reaches the age of majority. So the 1-year statute that the court was relying upon in the first place was wrong. When the court looked at the statute and said that these claims are barred by the statute of limitations, the trial court was wrong. The trial court was not applying District of Columbia law to those claims, and since those claims were common law claims, District of Columbia law had to govern those claims. And so our position is if District of Columbia law governs those claims, then you have to look to what the District of Columbia Court of Appeals would do had that same question been presented to it. But again, even if we don't do that, to dismiss those claims with prejudice and knock those claims out forever is just wrong under the circumstance. If anything, even if the court were to say that the district court, it was invited and it didn't have to do anything, even though it was brought to its attention with a motion for reconsideration, the dismissal with prejudice precludes those children from ever being able to bring those claims. And they wouldn't have the same result if they were in the District of Columbia. And for that reason, that is wrong. My time is up in terms of what I have left for rebuttal. So unless there are any other questions, I'll save the remaining time.
Thank you, Mr. Whitman.
Thank you.
Good morning. Mary Wilson representing Officer Chapman in the District of Columbia, which includes Officer Williams in her official capacity. I'd like to address the issues that were raised for the first time in the reply brief, starting with the claim that the minors are entitled to a do-over of this litigation by virtue of the fact that they are minors. One, this issue was raised for the first time in the reply brief, so the general rule of forfeiture should apply. 2, each child appears here through a parent who protects her interests, as well as counsel chosen by the parents. 3, the general rule that acts and omissions of counsel should be imputed to the client should apply here. But also, the rule cited by the plaintiffs that courts should protect the interests of minors does not apply to this situation. It does not apply to the totality of the circumstances here, where the plaintiff's lawyer expressly conceded a claim and the district court accepted that concession The rule to protect minors in the case law cited by plaintiff and cases cited in that case law generally applies to such situations as where the parent or lawyer commits discovery violations and their court has to decide on a sanction, or when there's a settlement and the court has to decide if the settlement is in the children's best interest. The rule does not apply here where a court should second guess every decision made in the course of litigation involving children. Here, the concessions are a mechanism to simplify litigation. The district court was entitled to take that concession at its face value, even though there were children involved here.
Ms. Wilson, the issue, as I understand it, is whether the dismissal was properly with prejudice, right? Not whether it was proper to dismiss, but whether it was properly with prejudice. Let me tell you what we said in Bellazan against Hirshon. The standard for dismissing a complaint with prejudice is high, quote, and this is now quoting the Firestone case. Dismissal with prejudice is warranted only when a trial court determines that the allegations of other facts consistent with the challenged pleading could not possibly cure the deficiency. Therefore, a complaint that omits certain essential facts and thus fails to state a claim warrants dismissal pursuant to Rule 12b-6, but not dismissal with prejudice, close quote.
Well, I think that rule is applicable here to the dismissal of the Fourth Amendment claims, but the court, when the plaintiffs dismissed their common law claims.
Are you acknowledging that the Fourth Amendment claims should go back?
No. Okay. On the Fourth Amendment claims, as we argue in our brief.
You can keep going, I'm sorry.
How you argue? The general rule is that a sua sponte dismissal is without prejudice, except this court's decisions in Jones and Whiting says that if it is clear from the record and any additional proffers made by the plaintiff that any remand would be futile because nevertheless the plaintiff cannot state a claim, then it doesn't matter if it's without prejudice or with prejudice.
On the Fourth Amendment claim, how could it be futile? You didn't move to dismiss Fourth Amendment claims. The district court did sua sponte. The complaint, as Mr. Latimer points out, says that Officer Chapman caused an unjustified and unlawful touching of plaintiffs when they, meaning Chapman and Williams, beat plaintiffs with their batons and forced plaintiffs to the ground. That is generally, sounds like an excessive force claim, and I don't see how you can say that meets the standard necessary for a dismissal with prejudice sua sponte.
Paragraph 24, taken in a vacuum, as Your Honor just read it, we concede would state a claim. However, in this case, the complaint had a detailed chronological recitation of the facts, devoid of any allegation that Chapman used a baton. The detailed facts...
It used a collective for several officers who were involved in the beating.
Several other officers. First it says...
And that, together with the subsequent statement that says Chapman himself beat plaintiffs with a baton and forced them to the ground, that's not enough? That's why you didn't move to dismiss in the first place.
Well, there was also the stronger allegations against Officer Williams at that early stage. Perhaps the district did not make a distinction between the two officers. But the factual statement is clear in the complaint. Officer Chapman ordered them back to the sidewalk, and then he forcibly shoved one of the plaintiffs multiple times. Then Officer Williams pulls out her baton and beats certain plaintiffs with it. Then in the legal conclusion of the complaint, there's this loose statement about the both officers using the baton that we submit, read in light of the statement of facts, is inaccurate, especially when you read it in the context of the opening.
One part of the complaint's inaccurate in light of another part of the complaint? That's an odd...
Well, that paragraph 24... Under the conclusions of under the statement of the counts, is inconsistent with the statement of the facts. If it was just the complaint, then perhaps, you know, you could read our, paragraph 24 liberally. But we also have the appellant's opening brief on appeal. In the opening brief, both in the description of the facts and in the legal discussion, is clear that there's no allegation that Officer Chapman used a baton. The statement of the facts in page 9 of the opening brief, Chapman used excessive force and began shoving the plaintiffs, then Officer Williams then struck the plaintiffs with the baton. And as well in the discussion of...
What page was that, sir?
Page 9 of the opening brief. And also in the legal section, I didn't note the page on that, the legal discussion talks about Officer Williams using the baton with no allegation that Officer Chapman...
What matters is the complaint.
Well, I think you have to read the complaint in the context of the argument on appeal. But... just on the concession as to the...
You didn't move to dismiss the common law claims against the minors either, correct?
Correct. But as we clarified in the reply, in the reply to the opposition to the motion to dismiss, we noted that the plaintiffs had made this plain concession, and then we noted perhaps we noted that the complaint was in fact ambiguous. It did not allege that the children had been arrested, but then, you know, lists the common law claim of false arrest for all the plaintiffs.
You agree that absent the concession, the right rule as a matter of law is that the minors' claims could proceed?
Yes, absent the concession. I would like to say if the court remands any of this case, that the court should clarify what's left on remand. On appeal, both in the opening brief and the reply brief, the plaintiffs address only two claims, the common law claims with respect to the juveniles and the Fourth Amendment claim of excessive force as to Officer Chapman. They have forfeited or abandoned the Monell claim against the district, whether it's with or without prejudice. The Fourth Amendment claims based on false arrest. They forfeited any claim as to the other officers who arrived. They've forfeited any claim of a right to serve Officer Williams untimely, which they raised in their Rule 59 motion and do not raise address on appeal.
That was not resolved, was it?
Well, they asked for more time to serve Officer Williams, and the court denied their Rule 59 motion. And they do not raise that issue on appeal. And they've also conceded...
So are you saying it's established that there was not... that service was not perfected?
Yes. They, in their Rule 59 motion, they asked for more time to serve Officer Williams. They did not raise that on appeal, and in any event, the Rule 59 motion was in itself deficient because it did not address the Rule 4M criteria for showing diligence in the attempted service. So to the extent the court remands any portion of this case, we ask the court to clarify what is left on remand.
What stage was that additional time denied? Was that simultaneous with the ruling on dismissal with prejudice?
No. The Rule 59 motion, the motion to reconsider, has a sentence or two in it asking for more time to serve Officer Williams.
So it was part of the reconsideration?
Yes. Yes. If there are no other questions, we urge the court to affirm. Thank you.
Mr. Lattimore? Very little time.
Just because you have someone in a position where you can take advantage of a situation, you shouldn't be allowed to do that. They didn't ask for a dismissal of the Fourth Amendment claims because they know they didn't have a basis for it. And as to this suggestion about limiting it because only one thing has been raised, in paragraph 21 of the complaint, what was said was defendant officers Williams and Chapman, while acting under color state law, unlawfully and without legal justification, deprived plaintiffs of their liberty against their will by use of threats and force when they detained and incarcerated them. Now, if that's not an unlawful seizure claim, I don't know what is. And so this suggestion that they should be limited in what they do just makes no sense. You cannot have this selective reading of a complaint. The complaint must be read as a whole. The district court didn't dismiss certain portions of the complaint. The district court dismissed the complaint. The district court had an obligation to read every paragraph of this complaint and view everything in the context of what was in the best interest of the plaintiff at that point. The district court didn't do that. And now the district is trying to hop on the bandwagon, even though they know that they're not entitled to this. And that's simply not right. This matter should be remanded. And as to Williams, if the plaintiff sought to amend their complaint to add him, they would be allowed to do that under the liberal pleading rules that are allowed for amendment of complaints. So why should they not be allowed to bring Williams in because they're claiming that service wasn't attained within the period? They filed their motion to dismiss before the time for Williams had expired. This complaint was filed in November of 2010. The motion to dismiss was filed in January of 2009 and January of 2010. There was still time to serve Williams at that time. So why should the plaintiff be precluded from doing that? What we would submit to you is that on the facts of this case, with respect to this complaint, the district court erred as a matter of law.
You just said that the motion to dismiss was filed before the time to serve Williams had run.
Correct.
Was it resolved before then, before the time to serve had run?
No, I believe it was not. I believe that the you're talking about the opinion of the district court? Yes, the opinion of the district court, by the time it was issued, the time to serve Williams had run.
It doesn't really matter when the motion was filed.
Well, when you're talking about that, because the representation below was by plaintiff's then counsel was that Williams had service had been perfected. So that issue was never resolved because at the time, no affidavit had been served, which is true. But that issue had not been resolved at that point, and the district had withdrawn any motion with respect to Williams because they indicated that Williams had not been served, and so they filed a precipice indicating that they were not seeking to have the court resolve the issues with respect to Williams other than with respect to the official capacity claims, which were in effect claims against the District of Columbia.
Is that in the JA, that piece?
Yes, that is in their, it's in their brief, I'm sorry.
Not a JA, it's an appendix, sorry. You didn't reproduce, or prior counsel didn't reproduce it in here?
It did not, Your Honor, unfortunately.
Where is it referenced in your brief?
It is in...
Oh, it's your reply brief?
I'm sorry, it is referenced in the district's motion... On 17, that is
17 of
the brief of the appellees on page 17.
In that footnote?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And did you address that in your reply brief at all?
No, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lattimore.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case is submitted.
Thank you. Good job.
Nothing wrong? Nothing more.
Hi, you slapped it off.